Let's proceed and consider a devotional reading from selections, a few verses from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which deals with the subject that we are going to consider, and so that we prepare our minds to take up the subject. The topic is on death. When he falls into weakness, whether it be through old age or sickness, he falls into weakness, then, like as a mango or the fruit of the wave-leaved fig or of the holy fig tree is loosened from its stem, so the spirit of man is loosed from these bodily members and returns again by the same pathway to its former dwelling place in the life. Then, like as when the king is coming forth, the nobles, officers, charioteers and magistrates make ready with food and drink and shelter, saying, "The king is coming forth, the king is at hand." So, all the powers make ready to wait on the soul, saying, "The soul is coming forth, the soul is at hand." And like as when the king will go forth, the nobles, officers, charioteers and magistrates gather about him, so verily at the time of the end, all the life powers gather round the soul when it has gone so far that a man is giving up the ghost. When he falls into a swoon, as though he had lost his senses, the life powers are gathering in round the soul, and the soul, taking them up together in their radiant substance, enters with them into the inner heart. When the power that dwells in sight forwards and outwards, he beholds the visible world, but now the powers are merged into the one, and then they say, he no longer sees. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer smells. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer tastes. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer speaks. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer hears. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer thinks. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer touches. His powers are merged into one, and they say, he no longer knows. Paradise. Then the point of the heart grows luminous, and when it has grown luminous, it lights the soul upon its way. Or from the eye, from the head, or from the eye, or from other parts of the body. And as the soul rises upwards, the life breath rises upwards with it. And as the life breath rises upward with it, the powers rise up with the life breath. The soul becomes conscious and enters into consciousness. Then his wisdom and works take him by the hand, and the knowledge gained of the old. Then, as a caterpillar, when it comes to the end of a leaf, reaches forth to another foothold, draws itself over to it, so the soul, leaving the body and putting off unwisdom, reaches another foothold there, drawing itself over to it. As a worker in gold, taking an ornament, moulds a form newer and fairer, so in truth the soul, leaving the body here and putting off unwisdom, makes for itself another form newer and fairer. A form like the forms of departed souls, or of the seraphs, or of the gods, or of the creators, or of the eternal, or of other beings. The soul of man is the eternal. It is made of consciousness, it is made of feeling, it is made of life, it is made of vision, it is made of hearing. It is made of earth, it is made of the waters, it is made of the air, it is made of the ether, it is made of the radiance and what is beyond radiance. It is made of desire and what is beyond desire. It is made of wrath and what is beyond wrath. It is made of the law and what is beyond the law. It is made of the all. The soul is made of this world and of the other world. Rebirth. According as were his works and walk in life, so he becomes. He that does righteously becomes righteous. He that does evil becomes evil. He becomes holy through holy works and evil through evil. As they said of old, man verily is formed of desire. As his desire is, so is his will. As his will is, so he works. And whatever work he does, in the likeness of it he grows. Through his past works, he shall return once more to rebirth, entering whatever form his heart is set on. When he has received full measure of reward in paradise for the works from that world, he returns again to this, the world of works. So that was from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which spoke about the nature of soul, which is our essential nature, and his relationship with the body and the various senses, faculties, organs, powers, forces, and what is the condition in life, what is the condition during death, and what happens after death, and what is the condition after the rest that he has in what is called as paradise, which is rebirth, leads to rebirth. So, resurrection of the dead. This topic can be seen in three odd ways. First is actual bodily resurrection of a person. This is a very strong view held in Abrahamic religions, which is Judaism, Christianity and Mohammedanism, Islam. Their eschatology, that is, their doctrines upon the end of the world or end of time, what happens at the end of time, end of world. Their eschatology speaks about a certain judgment day, where all the souls, all beings are called to recount their deeds, and then judgment is made, and those who are faithful, whatever the word faithful means, are sent to reach eternal happiness, they are resurrected, and the others are not. Very briefly speaking, this is what the judgment is. In the New Testament Revelations, chapter 20, verse 11, a brief description of this judgment day is mentioned. Let's see what it says. The author is saying, "Then I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it. From his presence earth and sky fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. and the dead were judged by what was written in the books according to what they had done. Since this resurrection is promised according to what the Orthodox religion says, the practice of burial of the dead is maintained among these religions, and they don't cremate the body, they don't burn the body. They bury the body so that resurrection, when it happens, body is there to be resurrected, briefly. This is also based, especially in Christianity, upon the supposed resurrection of Christ, which happened after his crucifixion, and 3 days after his crucifixion, he was said to be bodily resurrected. Now, there is a profound symbolical meaning behind this resurrection of Christ. What it is, we'll come to that. But let us first consider the first kind of resurrection, way of looking at the resurrection of the dead, which is bodily resurrection. Now, we all know that body, once a person is dead and gone, as the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, once the soul gathers all the life powers and goes to his next state, the body becomes a corpse, starts decaying, starts disintegrating, and whether you bury it, cremate it, or let it just be, over a period of time, everything decays, decomposes, goes back into its natural elements, reaches back into its natural elements. So bodily resurrection doesn't make any sense. But there is another kind of resurrecting the dead, which is evoking the spirits of the dead. We all have our dear departed ones. There are some people of peculiar nature who claim that they are able to communicate through various means with those who are dead and gone. They conduct what is called as seances, which is a meeting wherein they do certain rituals, techniques, and through that the supposed spirit of the person who is dead and gone comes in contact with the person who is doing this seance, who is called as a medium, and through him and through various phenomena they communicate. You pose a question and they respond to that question, and so on. So Ouija board is one such they use slate writing and the raps on the table. You ask a question, and depending on the number of the raps that occur on the table, chair, or anywhere, you get the answer to your question. So there are these various such techniques that the mediums use. Now, the question that is there before us is it possible to communicate with those who are dead and gone? That's what we need to consider. In order to understand this, in order to come to a rational explanation of this, we need to consider what man is. Man in his entirety, man in his all aspects. If we take man as physical body alone, it explains no mystery of life. Life remains a riddle, and somewhere, as Shakespeare says, life becomes a tale told by a fool, full of fury without any meaning. That's what life becomes if you consider from the point of view of the body alone. But what is body, physical body? Ancient science says that physical body is the outermost shell of man. It is the outermost covering for the real man. When we say man, not man man, woman. Man means manas, thinker. For that real man to come in contact with nature, come in contact with the universe, he evolves various sheets, various bodies, various vestures, of which the physical is the outermost covering. For him to function on this plane, gather experience from this plane, a body which is made up of the elements of this plane is naturally necessary. Physical body is that. The senses which the physical body has, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, these are not actually the real senses. What the Oriental ancient psychology says is, these are but outer openings and outer physical channels, but the real senses lie in the inner man. Inner man. At the bodily death, a body goes away. But that is not the entire secret of death. What the science sees as death is only the beginning of the process of death. There are many things that happen beyond that which cannot be ascertained by microscope and other such physical devices. But there are other instruments that man can develop, other senses that man can develop, through which he can ascertain for himself empirically what is going on after death. So the invisible man, apart from the physical body, there are other vestures in man. The physical functions not by itself. The physical functions, physical body functions based on a certain model, vital principle, which is the invisible man. That is where the real senses, the real eyes, the real hearing, touching, tasting, sensation, that's where it lies in all of us. Whereas we think it is physical because we are so attached to physical, so involved and identified with the physical body. So this inner man is extremely complicated. Any doctor will say how our physical body is a marvel. Every organ, every tissue, cell, and the way they coordinate, the functions, a beautiful system. Inner man is far more complicated. This inner man has its own anatomy, its own physiology, its own laws. Just like there are biological laws which govern our biological entity, there are those inner laws which govern our inner nature. So there are laws of health for physical being, there are laws of health for the inner being. We know if we take bad food, what damage it's going to cause us. Similarly, for the inner man, it is the thoughts, feelings, words, desires that we generate, those are the food, that is what is the intake for the body, and that is what ill health or maintains the health and hygiene of the body. So this inner man has to be understood. Physical body, as we said, goes away more or less immediately after death, but this inner man has a life which is longer than the physical body. And his inner man, when we say inner man, the inner physical body is also not our true nature. What the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad reading said as the soul is not even this inner body. He is the dweller in this inner body. And through the inner body, we have all come in touch with the outer physical and gather experience. So, what happens after death? Now, every moment of our life, our inner as well as the outer body is constantly impressed with our thoughts, feelings, our desires, what we speak, what we do, it's constantly getting impressed upon every atom, every smallest life that is there in us is getting impressed by our character, basically. Our moral nature is impressed on this. When the physician pronounces a person as dead, then begins the actual process of death. The inner real man at the moment of death is very busy. He is like a bee which gathers honey from various flowers. He is at the moment of death reviewing the whole of life for whatever number of years, going through every event, every feeling, every thought, every action that was performed, rapidly going through it even in the smallest detail and gathering all the experiences. After all, what is the purpose of life? Why is he here? Why are we all here? So that some experiences for good of the soul can be had in this body. So all those thoughts, feelings, and the whole mass of energy is gathered, reviewed and gathered by the soul at the moment of death. Then the separation from the physical happens. But the inner body is still there. The real man is there, even there, residing in the inner body. He is not separated from this inner body. The time, the moment where, just like a farmer who has sown the seeds in the right season and there is a harvest, he has gathered the harvest, but the harvest contains both the grain and the chaff. What the farmer needs is the grain. The chaff, he has to winnow it and separate it. Similarly, a point of death, a stage in the process of death is where of all the energies which have been gathered, the harvest which has been gathered in life, the separation takes place. Those thoughts and feelings which are of same nature as the soul, which in other words means those thoughts and feelings and actions which are of altruistic nature, impersonal nature, of abstract, of something beyond our personality, personal self, anything beyond that personal self, the goodwill that we have for others, the love that we have for others, the concern that we have for others, all those are the real food, the real wealth, the real Lakshmi that has been generated in life. So that is taken, and all the other useless, personal, selfish energies that we have generated, thoughts and feelings, are left behind. Then he goes into, the real man goes into a condition, he goes into means he, his own actions that he has generated while in life puts him into that condition. There is no other person, God or anybody, who puts him into that condition. His own karma, his own actions that he has generated puts him into a of deep rest, peace and bliss. And what happens to all the personal, the desires, the lower negative tendencies that we have generated? Those are all of them coalesce together with that inner body that we were mentioning. This is what is called as a ghost. Bhuta, Preta, you know, we get afraid of it. We are the ones who are generating it while alive. It's there within us. Just like we leave the physical body as something that is not worthy, as something that it has finished its time, similarly all these lower negative feelings and tendencies are left in the inner plane. On the plane, physical body is left in the physical world, those feelings and tendencies are left on the inner plane corresponding to our plane of mind. So when a person tries to communicate with the dead, it is not with that real person who has gone so into such a high state of consciousness, peace and rest. It's not with that being that he is communicating, it is with this shell that the real man has left and gone. How do we explain the various answers that such entities give, respond to in seances to the medium? The medium poses a question, some question about the personal life of the spirit which has been evoked, and the spirit is able to respond to it. These are all because various, it's a deep science behind it, various factors that come into play. We cannot go into details of it, but one of the thing is this: where is memory in man? Where is memory? It's not only in the brain, it's in every atom. There is memory. All that we have done is impressed in the lives that are there in our charge, which go on to make up our physical as well as the other bodies. It's impressed. What we are thinking, the other person outside may not know, but a good clairvoyant can look at a person and clearly say what his character is. Though the person may outwardly appear very pious, very kind and so on, his inward character is indelibly impressed in our nature. So all the happenings, the thoughts, feelings are impressed in that shell. And it is with this shell that the person communicates, thinking that he has actually evoked the spirit, the actual soul of the dead. The actual state, the high spiritual state that we all go into after this separation has taken place, is a condition from which we cannot come into contact with this world, see what is happening. You know, there is a popular belief that those who are dead and gone, our fathers, forefathers, our dear departed ones, they are looking at us, seeing us and all. The popular belief. But that's not the case. That's not the case. Nature has made a provision for every soul to take rest. In a few hours we are all going to sleep. Just imagine if there were to be no sleep. Just imagine if even in your sleep you had to engage in your worldly affairs, there would be no rest at all. So nature has made a provision according to the cyclic law, which you find expressed everywhere in nature, where a period of action followed by period of rest, a period of life is followed by period of quiescence and silence. So this you find everywhere, and that's the same case in the progress, in the journey of the soul also. After a period of 60, 70, 80, whatever number of years, nature gives that soul a period of rest. Cyclic law. And in that, it's such a, you know, if you read, if you go into what happens in that condition and the description of it is so beautiful. You would actually envy those who are dead and gone and not feel sorrow that, oh, they have left and gone. You would feel happy that they are in such a profoundly blissful condition and feel sorry for yourself, not for those who are dead and gone. It is said that divine dream. It's called dream not because it's like the usual dream that we have every night. It is dream because it is subjective. The state of consciousness, there is no place heaven There is no place outside in space where every soul goes and sits. It's not in space. It's a state of consciousness. For example, in your dream and deep sleep, you are still there. The body and all is still there. But the state of consciousness is different. Similarly, in the death also, state of consciousness is different. In this deep divine dream, the soul is 100 times compensated for all the sufferings that it had in life. Every single pain, smallest feeling of injustice that it has to go through, and suffering, misfortune, is all compensated, overcompensated with feelings of bliss, joy and peace. The soul does not see what is happening. For example, a soul of which had inhabited a body of a mother with small children and a drunkard husband. The body is gone. Soul goes into this deep, profound spiritual state. It is not seeing what is happening to its children. What is its condition? If that were to be the case, that condition the soul will be in terrible pangs to see what is actually happening to its children in this world, in this cruel world. So nature provides a provision, is given a provision where, and think about it, there is, the physical body is left here, the inner body is also left, is the instrument by which the communication can happen. By which it can come in contact with this world. Instruments are all gone. It has left all these instruments. In that dream state, it sees its husband, who was not very kind to her. It feels that the husband is so loving, so caring. It feels that the presence of its children along with her, with a happy life. So that dream goes on for a long, long, long duration. Certainly it is a heaven compared to the cruelties and the injustice that it would have faced on this earth. So that cannot be contacted at all. There is very, very, very rare cases of highly developed adepts, sages, who have the power to communicate such a soul, and they would never do it. It's a deep topic, let's not even go there. But the general understanding of evoking through Ouija board and slate writing and all, it is with these moral dregs. The moral dregs of the person which is left in this inner world, the body with all its desires, it is with that entity that a person communicates. And that entity has no intelligence. The intelligence has gone to that high state. What it repeats is like a parrot, like a tape recorder. Whatever has been recorded, it keeps on playing the same thing. And think about it, how dangerous it is to do such evocations, communicate with these entities. There are other dangers to which we will not go into, but we'll consider one of them, a few of them in this context of this talk. When you communicate, when you evoke these shells, right, these ghosts, communicate with them, you are contaminating severely your own inner psychic nature. What is it that you are communicating with, opening a channel and talking in the sense communicating with? You are communicating with the worst and the most earthly negative aspects of a person which he has left here and gone. It's not the real person. The negative, most concentrated negative aspects, it is with this that you are communicating. Imagine the contamination that you will have upon your own nature, and what is more, upon the inner nature, the inner atmosphere of the whole world. Because what is the fate, the destiny of this shell? Just like the physical body disintegrates after a period of time, left to itself, the shell also disintegrates gradually over a period of time. Because there is no intelligence which keeps impressing it with life force, like when we are alive. We are keeping this body and inner body and all, knowingly, unknowingly, alive. But the inner soul has gone, and this shell that is there is left to itself. It will gradually disintegrate on the inner plane, dissipate and go away. But by evoking these entities, the medium and the sitters who are engaged in this, they infuse life back into the shell. They strengthen it and give it more life. And the psychological moral implications of this is very, very deep, very deep. It is said that when you evoke such a being, such an entity, the ego which was connected to this during its life, its deep sleep is actually disturbed, because there is a connection, there is a magnetic connection. And when that soul comes back to rebirth at some point of time later, if this entity is still alive, it leads to very severe psychological problems. We will not go into it, it becomes too complicated. But we actually studied it, by the way, in our Key to Theosophy study class. So, after all this, the soul, the real entity, after this long period of deep sleep, it is said on an average person will be in that state for anything like 14 to 15 centuries. Just like when we eat for 15-20 minutes. How long does it take to digest? Hours. Similarly, the soul which has gathered food in this life of whatever number of decades, for nature, for it to assimilate it, go through it, make these noble qualities, virtues, part of itself, it takes long, long, long time. So all the virtues that we generate and the defects that we overcome, the weaknesses that we kill in us, the bad tendencies that we overcome, when we have this fight within ourselves while alive, all this effort is not lost. All the efforts and the battles that you have won against your lower nature, the victory is retained, and you bring it back when you come back to life, next life, has so much of strengthened nature, strengthened character. This is what explains why there is such great differences in our moral, mental capacities. Each one of us is unique, because each one of us have generated that. We bring it back, we take it from life to life, our character. So that makes each one of us so unique. Each one of us, brothers, twins, born to the same parents, grew up in the same environment, same school, same college, everything identical, yet you can find distinct differences in their character. It is because the soul brings its mental, moral heredity, the mental deposits that have been done over many, many lives, portion of it is expressed in this life, which makes it unique. So all our, death is the end of everything. Death is like a sleep. Sleep is temporary death. Death is permanent sleep for that personality. Bhagavad Gita says that it's like clothes. You wear these clothes today. Tomorrow you remove this and wear new set of clothes. Similarly, when you come back to life again, when we all come back to life again, A new set of clothes, new set of body, brain, senses. But the tendencies, the capacities, the fortunes and misfortunes, all the parents, the time of birth, the place of birth, the family in which we are born, the circumstances, all these who generated? We ourselves have generated in the past. Out of the huge mental bank account, we withdraw a few portion of it and exhaust it in each life. So looking at this, there is another kind of resurrection that we can speak of, which is the resurrection of the dead, quote unquote. Who are the dead? With this understanding of life and death, we know that in reality there is no death at all for the real being, right? He goes from life to life, life to life. A body dies, his inner body goes. He goes to deep sleep, comes back and puts on another garment. But who are the dead? You know what? We'll read this. The real dead, the real death is ignorance. Ignorance of our true, real self, forgetfulness of our divine nature is the only death. The physical body dies, you think you have lost your relatives, but you are going to die sometime soon. You all come back together in one or the other relationship, in the midst of your friends and enemies that you have to work out all those tendencies. No, death is nothing. But when you forget your true self, then the kind of mistakes that we do, errors that we get into, and the actions that we do based on that ignorance is going to lead you to innumerable lives and deaths, which are all mansions of pain and sorrow, as Krishna says. Which is why Shankara says in his one of the commentaries, Atma Agnanam Mrityu. Ignorance of the nature of self is the true death, pramada, or carelessness, or lack of vigilance about our true nature. That's true death. Atma agnanam mrityum janana maranadi sarvanartha bijam aham bravim. Janana maranadi, which is everything beginning from birth and death, right? Which birth and death leads to all your pain, sorrow, suffering, misfortune, all begins with birth, right? And the sorrow that the death brings. Janana maranadi sarva anartha, all misfortunes, sarva anartha bijam aham bravim. This is the seed, this ignorance is the seed which leads to all other misfortunes, all other kinds of sorrows and suffering. So who are dead? We are all walking dead. We think we are alive. We are all walking dead. In the dream of Ravan, this is very poetically, philosophically mentioned. Let us read, consider a couple of more points and then we will close. Take up any questions. Here, sage Ananta is giving profound philosophical teachings about life and death, and then he makes this observation in one place about death. Now what he says, isn't carefully consider this, very, very touching, very moving, very profound. He says, in every house there is a cry and a grief, an old man expiring, a child struggling, a strong man agonized, a woman weeping, a little girl with frightened and tearful face. as if the terrible avenger Yama had not imposed on humanity a sufficient measure of suffering and death, man goes forth himself in gold and plumes and gay caparisons to crush the limbs and dash out the brains and pierce the heart and bowels of his fellow men. As if Yama has not done sufficient, given sufficient suffering. And on the battlefield are left horrible sights, terrible cries and fearful smells of death. And in the city, the women weep and break their bangles and shave their heads and put on grey, unbleached and russet garments and are thenceforth held to be of evil omen. O tragic man, whence is all this death in thy life? Alas, look at this. Whence is all this death in thy life? Everywhere you see things are dying, dying, dying. Where did this death come from? Alas, it is because an inward moral death reigns throughout all, that it must have this outward manifestation also. The suffering, the sorrow, the death that you see outside is because there is an inward moral death that finds its expression outside. Men's souls are dead when they are born. What we call as life is in a way the death for the soul. Men's souls are dead when they are born. This life is the autopsy. And the disease is made manifest to all. We all, our soul, by our character, moral nature is so corrupt that leads to this life, which we call as life, which is actually death. And in our life, there is an expression of the disease which lead to the death of the soul. Look at this. One died mad of pride, one with anger, one had the fever of ambition, one suffered from the insatiable craving of greed, one from the malignant venom of revenge, one from the jaundice of jealousy, one from the eating cancer of envy, one from the surfeit of self-love, one from the paralysis of apathy. Many were the diseases, but death into this world the common result of all. Yes, death is triumphant here, death physical and moral. The dead bring forth the dead. The dead bear the dead to the funeral pyre. And the dead walk about the street and greet each other and bargain and buy and sell and marry and build. Not all the time, they are but ghosts and phantoms. So, Sage Ananta says, that land of silence and shadows, of desolation and ruins, of sorrow and death, is the world in which thy dead body now walking. And in one of the articles, I think in ISIS Unveiled, we study, HP says that our present cycle is preeminently one of such soul deaths. We elbow soulless men and women at every step in life. Crucifixion is mentioned. What is crucifixion? Who is the Christ who is crucified? What is the cross? If you stand and extend your arms, that becomes the cross. The cross in which the Christ is crucified is your own body, our own body. Terrestrial passions, anger, jealousy, lust, envy, all the diseases that were mentioned are the ones which have crucified Christ. That Christ has to be resurrected. The Christ within us, the spiritual consciousness within us, which has been crucified by our terrestrial mind, has to be resurrected. Which is why the teacher says, what is the coming of Christ? The coming of Christ is mentioned so often in Christian theology. The coming of Christ means the presence of Christos in a regenerated world, and not at all the actual coming of body of Christ. This Christ is to be sought neither in the wilderness nor in the inner chambers, in the sanctuary of any temple or church built by man. For Christ, the true esoteric savior, is no man, but the divine principle in every human being. The divine spark, the conscience that we hear, is a dim expression of that voice, divine presence in us. So every time we say, I won't listen to my conscience, but do something which is personally gaining, personally more satisfying for me, and shut out the divine conscience, we are crucifying the Christ. But when we listen to our conscience and make reason dictate our desires, not the other way around, and make virtues fight vices and destroy it, we are liberating the Christ within us. He who strives to resurrect the spirit crucified in him by his own terrestrial passions and buried deep in the sepulchre of his sinful flesh, he who has the strength to roll back the stone of matter from the door of his own inner sanctuary, he has the risen Christ in him. So the advice, final advice that sage Ananta gives to Ravan in this work is, renounce and annihilate it. What is it? Your personality, your personal self, a feeling of separateness. Renounce and annihilate it, O King, by asceticism and divine gnosis. True knowledge. Asceticism and divine gnosis. And thus return to true life, real life, resurrection. So there are some ideas that we can consider in this. So please, any questions or points or comments?